And have Pat Cummings join us. And yesterday you heard, at right about now, you heard from Andy Beier. And Andy essentially, between the piece that Bill Finley wrote for TDN and then on air with us, obviously voicing the displeasure over the situation with the GMAX timing system, the GPS satellite timers, and the discrepancies that are cropping up on a regular basis. And Pat Cummings joins us. Pat, with a extensive response, essentially, to the situation. And it was, Pat, more what your piece was more than just a Thoroughbred Idea Foundation commentary. This really sits with you, you know, quite pointedly, given your background and your interests, and you know the time you spent at Trackus. You understand a lot of the confluences that are involved. Good morning.
Good morning, Steve, and thanks for inviting me on to talk about it. It's a personal topic, and it's a personal piece penned, you know, essentially in first-person voice, given my past experience with Trackus. And, you know, it's such a more complex topic than meets the eye, and it on the surface, it doesn't sound like it would be, right? It's, you know, coming up with accurate times to track horses running in circles. But it is... it is complex, the way in which it has been done for a very long time. Andy's comments on it yesterday, the comments in the interview with Bill Finley, the piece from TDN, and I think are all very right on point. But you need to understand a little bit of the history, right, as to how this topic has evolved. How Trax has kind of changed some of the ways in which they've done some things, how Trax have introduced new technology over time in terms of introducing Trackus, which has been in the American racing sphere for 14 years, right? We've had chicklets on our screen for a long time, and how that evolved from just being able to better follow the horses to... Oh, wait, you guys have times two? Because I started at Trackus in 2011, was there for 4 years. That was right around the time that they became an official timer at Gulfstream and Tampa, later at Santa Anita and Del Mar, and then had since been replaced this season at Del Mar. And, yeah, I have a lot of experience in that sphere. And, you know, what... This had not been an area that we had gotten into from a Thoroughbred Idea Foundation perspective. It's certainly amongst the kind of general topics in terms of access to information, the Free Data Friday movement, and greater transparency and integrity and all those matters. But when people who Andy referenced to, you know, Craig Mulkowski, Randy Moss, those types of people were highlighting timing inaccuracies with this new system. And mind you, Trackus had plenty and still does have plenty of issues in providing accurate times. There are reasons for those, just as I think there are reasons for the inaccuracies that GMAX was having in this Equibase deal. And the threat that poses to really history, accurate participation and assessment by horse players, by breeders, by owners, trainers, jockeys, all sorts. This touches every facet of the industry, and not everybody necessarily realizes it straight up, but it's a significant issue. It's more complex than it seems, and it's one that, you know, we just couldn't let go untouched any longer, particularly as these kind of new distribution deals, an expanding base of GPS timing was really kind of kicking in. I think we just had to really kind of nip this one in the bud.
Well, a couple of things, and you can, I mean, you covered a lot of ground in the piece, and I just, you tweeted it, the link to it, and I just retweeted it. The technology, it from what you can glean, Pat, is this situation, can it be rectified? Because he is certainly, based on the commentary that came out of the Equibase side, in terms of quotes, it didn't sound like they were willing to acknowledge an issue and that they've got an approach that would improve and make the, you know, the timing mechanism work properly and accurately.
Yeah, so what we have right now with the legacy beam-based timing systems that are in place at tracks like Keeneland, Churchill, the Naira tracks, who have not changed, who have not adopted these other timing methods, is very limited in what it can do, but is very accurate when it works, and it works almost all the time. As you have said several times today and yesterday, bird, outrider, track personnel, so every so often a photographer will trip the beam-based systems accidentally, but the super, super, super majority of the time, it works accurately. But it is very limited in what it does, right? It doesn't create in-running graphics. It doesn't show you where all the horses are. It doesn't have individual sectional times. The Trackus effort and now this GPS-based GMAX effort, and it is worth noting that the Trackus system in America is not a GPS system, okay? So this is it's a different technology, but there are some very similar fundamentals to it. They have issues. They're tracking every horse. But in order to track devices, you need to calibrate them to be successful at tracking and optimize the tracking. And as we all know, 99% of a horse race, the horses are not accelerating in a very short period of time. They're typically running within a range of, let's just say, 27 to 42 miles per hour. That is almost every bit of the race. And my experience has been that these devices are typically optimized to find the signals of these devices within that range of speed. That's where you need the greatest tracking capability. But what happens in an American horse race, and it's important to make the delineation, as Dick Powell referenced earlier today, and Andy too, horses typically are not up to speed when the timing starts. And it's the same problem that Trackus had at Gulfstream Park for a variety of reasons, timing 1 mile races. And there's a long history in the media, the stories of Matt Hegarty. Andy Beyer himself has covered from years ago about those inaccuracies. I was quoted in a couple of them from my time at Trackus. And it has to do with the way we have timed races with ramp. And I wrote a piece years ago for thoroughbredracing.com, Thoroughbred Racing commentary about that. And you know, it covers run-up and why we do things the way we have done and haven't really changed them. Can GMAX fix this? Trackus hasn't seemingly fixed it in 14 years of timing American races, and I don't think that the industry, the tracks themselves, or Equibase, has stepped forward and said, why don't we try timing races when the gate opens instead of waiting for horses to run up to start the race? And that has some definite long-term effects on the way in which races are timed, right? If we continue to put the gate in the same place and we allow that to happen, the races are going to look slower and everything's, you know, the times will seem slower and we'll be timing full distances of races as opposed to what we do right now. And so those complexities need to be addressed. Based on what we've seen, and I think as Andy has pointed out pretty clearly yesterday, the times are inaccurate over many different distances, surfaces, rail settings, and specifically installations, right? We used an example in my piece of Penn National and a very clear error at Penn National for two races that were essentially exactly the same time but separated by 1.12 seconds. And buyer guys picked up on it. I think it's Dick Girardi and Bob Weir that do Penn National. And the Timeform guys picked up on it because, again, they're really looking at this closely. But the Equibase speed figures were 15 points apart, even though the race from the break of the gate to the finish was basically exactly the same time. 2 leaders went out, led all the way, but the times are showing up as 1.1 seconds difference, and that's, you know, more than 6 lengths, almost 7 lengths. And so can GMAX solve this problem? You know, that's certainly going to be up to them. But Equibase being willing to kind of continue on with it. There's no argument. As Jason Wilson said in both his piece at the Jockey Club Roundtable, and I like Jason personally and have enjoyed conversations with him over the years, and I wanted to make that very clear. This criticism is not personal. It's professional. But sometimes those matters get intertwined in our sport a little too much, and I really want to make it clear that, you know, it's nothing against him. It's just about the way in which this is being done, the lack of attentiveness to detail, and the need that accurate times affect so much of our sport, and that it needs to really be taken much more seriously. We shouldn't be taking technological back steps and then peddling that as if it's some sort of innovation, which is exactly what is happening here. So these things can provide in-race graphics. They have other benefits. But as the official time of American horse races and North American horse races, I just, it's not there. The accuracy is not present. And until it is, it would be wrong to continue showing the times, reflecting them in the charts, because they've been going in and changing them anyway. In post-production, essentially. And that's what caught my attention to this in recent weeks when they did it for the Bing Crosby. A grade one race. And I looked, and someone tweeted about it. It wasn't even one of the normal figure guys. It was Gary Doherty on Twitter. Runs that racing stats and info account. I saw it. I said, what's going on here?
Does a great
I looked
job.
At that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Looked at the Del Mar Times from that day and said, wait a second. Like, they changed 4 different races on that day. I looked the next day. They've done the same thing. No one's being told publicly. And to make matters worse, I checked, what about at other tracks where this technology's in place? I looked at Woodbine. They changed 8 of 11 races on the day. And as I say in the story, which, granted, it's long. It's a 15-minute read. It's quite comprehensive, but, you know, it certainly doesn't factor everything in. But you don't know the degree to which you are affecting people. You don't know who's going to look at that grade two race at Woodbine where the time was 1:32:01, and it goes into that horse player's mind. Man, they flew in that race, didn't they? Man, March to the Arch, he's really something. And you find out that 3 or 4 days later, they've revised it to, I'm just making this up now, Steve, 1:34:03, and suddenly this race is 2 seconds slower than I thought it was, but the impression in a live setting is, wow, I thought that looked really fast. Did you notice that? So we don't know the extent to which horse players, owners, trainers, breeders, jockeys are being affected. And so without that knowledge, my recommendation was stop. Stop putting out knowingly inaccurate information until you can have a greater sense of the accuracy, can have it confirmed by the experts. Accuracy should not be something we hide from. It should be something we continue to pursue and refine. And just like Major League Baseball does in posting scoring changes to the public, it could happen days later between either Major League Baseball, the Elias Sports Bureau, a panel of baseball journalists who get involved in these matters, post a log, put it out there, Let the people be able to know that they could go to it and say, look, here are the changes that have taken place from the original, if it happens going forward. Put it out there. Don't hide from it. Don't bury a line in the end of the race chart that says we've made an update to the times. Put it out. Make it very clear. Don't hide from it. And very clearly here, Steve, as I say at the very end, no one's coming in to displace Equibase. Okay, they are an essential monopoly on data in horse racing in this country and on this continent. We need them. We need them to be better. And it will make everything else about racing, data, and information better if they find ways to improve. One of those ways would be to make changes to the situation.
Well, that, not just changes. I mean, there has to be improvements. And you know, Dave Siegel and Jason Wilson, I had had them on at intervals as this was being developed. And I think most recently in the winter, in January or February, you know, we got the update and we're, you know, very excited about the potentials here. And we, you know, when they first started to publish those charts, the implication and the potential was obvious. But if it's doing, you know, damage to the database and making, you know, in this case, the people that drew the attention to it, the figure makers, as Andy said yesterday and subsequently in conversation with Randy Moss as well, there'll be a critical mass point here in terms of the number of racetracks utilizing the system, where buyer associates, and I'm going to assume Jerry Brown as well, and I would assume the team at Ragazin, they're not going to be able to make all the timing adjustments and watch every single race from every single oval and make the proper time adjustments. I mean, they're doing it now for the handful of tracks, but it's going, at some point it's going to outpace. So the system, whatever adjustments have to be made or integrations with the beam. You know, I asked Andy and I'll ask you, Pat, because I know you touched on it too in your piece. How do you envision the potential to utilize the two technologies together, to use as a check and balance against each other, I guess?
It absolutely makes the most sense. And it should be, quote unquote, easily implemented because Equibase now owns those teletimer assets, right? They own the beams and the poles, and, you know, that they are in charge of that technology now. So all they would be doing is replicating the existing situation at places like Churchill and Keeneland, who have a secondary system that is used to display graphics and other information like Trackus, but they can stick to the legacy beam-based systems for now until the technology has evolved, whether it's GPS or some other product in the future. I think the hybrid system makes perfect sense. We should focus on, if it's less data but more accurate data that has been used for years, that is the direction we should be going in until you can guarantee to a very reasonable consideration by the great experts in this field, like the buyer associates, like the sheets guys, that this information is needed because the industry relies on them, right? The people look to American figure makers as really the barons of speed and understanding speed and time. America's been timing races with the electric tracking systems for just about as long as anybody. Only I think Australia has done it a little bit longer, dating maybe 15 years prior to the U.S. doing it, but it really came here in the 30s. But when you see this move against or questioning of the validity of accuracy and needing to have accuracy, you're questioning the work of legends like Andy Beyer, who, you know, Andy gets himself up on this because it's his life's work, and it's well-respected, internationally recognized top-level work that he has done and his team has done for years. And to get the feeling that it's being bulldozed in the name of what is being peddled as innovation, but is clearly not providing the accuracy that an eight-decade-old technology was providing, it does not make our sport better in the present. So in the interim, the hybrid approach certainly works. It is not innovation. It's a step forward to take a step back. And that's what I think needs to happen here, to go back to those beam-based systems for now and evolve it. But if we just keep bulldozing over what's been happening, I mean, the number of records that have fallen at Canterbury in just the past couple of weeks, I mean, I know you've been big on the pick five. I was big early in the season with it. It's a tremendously fun bet and a fun track to play. But those guys have been victims of these times in switching to the system. A bunch of track records have fallen. And even I was looking, you know, you see a lot of horses that were coming back to Canterbury this year when you look at those races that had been running there the previous season, and they were, you know, basically just Minnesota-based horses. And you look at last season, and you looked at the races that they were running this season, you're like, man, I mean, these times are just so much faster. What is going on here? And it became pretty clear early on that the new system that they had adopted was just not providing them with the accuracy of the old system. And the old system probably has problems too, right? I had heard a story that their old kind of teletimer beam system was the original. It had been there since the track was put up in the late 80s or the mid 80s, and it hadn't been replaced and necessarily kept up with. So, you know, we're working with kind of trying to get through this and keep the accuracy, respect the sport, and the need for accurate information to really reach all parties, and staying with what we or ushering in an innovation that actually leads to a degradation in accuracy is not the right way. Albeit the other benefits that the system could be providing. You asked about the workouts earlier, and I heard you speak with Dick about that, and some references with Dyer yesterday. And my take on that, Steve, I'll just throw it out, is if you can't track, say, 10 horses accurately where they all start and finish at the same point, how are you possibly going to ensure accuracy with hundreds of horses on the track every morning, starting and stopping wherever they want for a quote-unquote workout? I don't see it as a viable option at this point with this product. There's only one country in the world that is actually timing workouts with electronic devices. It's not Hong Kong. I heard Dick mention that earlier. Hong Kong is still all human control. It's human observations, human time recording in the morning. Japan is doing this over certain courses, certain distances, at certain training centers. It's not universal there. They are the only ones doing it, and it's not a GPS system. So to think that technology could be applied here in America with the lack of controls that our tracks have on how horses work in the morning kind of defies belief, especially considering the early performance returns in the afternoon.
Now, and a couple of elements of what you just covered. I mean, the concern here, or you know, one of the key elements is this is essentially a you know, a fraudulent execution here, and the what was being passed off is unacceptable to the horse playing community, and then all the trickle down portions that are affected. And you know, there's also reports that tracks are being strong armed into this, which is disturbing. And then the reaction, the public reaction from you know, from Equibase in the face of these realities is even more disheartening. This is an enormous problem, and it's not getting the proper proper attention, and virtually every segment of the sport should be outraged by what has transpired here. And I'll get back to something I referenced this morning. Considering we've been lectured to ad infinitum about integrity and about the sport, you know, the sport having to, you know, really look in the mirror. And that integrity and the reference that more arrests are coming. If you're going to lecture everybody in the industry about integrity and then execute this for the last, 2 years, you got a problem.
Yeah.
I mean that's the part of this that the undercurrent here is really eye rolling. That you know everybody else should be transparent and should be toe the line on integrity and this is being perpetrated on everybody in the industry by the people taking that stance.
The arbiter of integrity is not the result of a blood or urine test. It is a wide-ranging term that affects information, medication, human participation in decision-making. And at the end of the day, when you have the opportunity for great financial reward combined with generally poor oversight and regulatory standards, that is corruption. That is where corruption resides, at the intersection of those two things. And we need to lift the collective standards of the sport for the benefit of the supermajority of well-intentioned participants.
Nice.
And it is not just a matter of drugs.
Yep.
It isn't. Yep. It is accuracy. It is correct information. It is ensuring that our races are run honestly and fairly, because if there's one individual in one race that's not doing it, a whole bunch of other people are going to be affected by it.
Yeah.
And it is not literally a pinprick that is going to only be the area. When I hear Horse Racing Integrity Act and I only see drugs being talked about, I think, this should be the Horse Racing Medication and Doping Control Act, not integrity. Integrity covers many other topics, and those go relatively uncovered under the auspices of that particular piece of legislation. And if that thing gets passed, so be it. Fine. But it's not as if we've solved the integrity issues and the integrity oversight of racing by passing a bill that really wrongly broadly defines integrity as merely Lasix or medication and doping control.
Well,
it is hardly that.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean the whole thing is a smokescreen anyway.
For
Lasix.
If I can spin it back to what you mentioned in the earlier part of that comment about the kind of the strong arming. I mean, I certainly have heard stories of that. And I have to say that the thing that we added a postscript to my piece, I mean, I had been working on this for quite a little while, but on Tuesday morning, the day before we published, I was sent a story about a commercial relationship between the GPS company, which is GMAX, Total Performance Data, which is a British-based company, XBNet, which is the international distribution arm of North American Racing to overseas customers. And their comment was, thanks to Equibase's rollout, we are now going to be able to launch a new in-running wagering product for foreign customers on American races. And there is a quote in the midst of this that says, the feed that you would receive fuses pricing with the details that are provided by Total Performance Data, which is GMAX's range of in-running analytics, including stride length, stride frequency, and sectional timings. So this is, you know, a day after it's talked about in the Jockey Club Roundtable, there was an announcement of a commercial deal that has been struck to increase in-running wagering on American races. And as much as I and my organization here are for fixed odds development on horse racing, I saw this and I said, geez, I feel for these European customers. If this status quo was allowed to continue with this inaccurate data, can you imagine if people are just looking at the in-running sectionals and, oh, this is a slow pace, I'm going to start betting the leader right now, and it's wrong. And when you know, it does get into questions of, you know, perpetrating a real falsehood on unwitting, unsuspecting customers, and now there is a commercial deal in place that is discussed at the end of the piece. We linked to the story, and I really kind of I felt really bad, downtrodden by that. Now there's an opportunity to right the wrong, and I hope it is. It is a complex topic. It can be frustrating for the people who work on it, who say, you know, gosh, you guys are really very demanding of accuracy. Well, yes, and we should be, and our sport should be, and everyone should be. It's an issue that affects everyone. But when it involves just the click of a watch, it doesn't feel like it's so egregious. You know, we're just talking about time. It's so much deeper than that, and it also reflects a really woeful understanding of the customers who keep racing going, right? The people who put up their money through now the online windows or in the sales ring or buy stallion seasons, sell horses, buy horses. It is all involved in this, up, down, left, and right. It has to be accurate. And it's such a bearish indicator that what essentially amounts to racing's data monopoly is trying to push off this inaccurate information on the customers that keep the sport going. It's just a blow that I don't think we could absorb, and really required fighting back. And the racing media is not as robust as it once was for so many different reasons. This is not just a racing industry issue, but the industry publications have been pretty quiet on this overall. And, you know, in the mainstream, if there was regular mainstream coverage of the sport in major newspapers, this topic probably would have gotten a greater airing more frequently than it has. But consolidation has led us to where we are. And I think it's something that if we don't start talking about, players don't start talking about, and it's clearly raised the ire of quite a few in the recent weeks, especially when it was pawned off as this is what makes Uber and Lyft work. The thought that we should just accept it blindly because of that, or that Jockey Club members would accept it blindly because it was positioned to them as such, is just beyond the pale. We should not stand for such a thing. If we ask for accuracy, or if we ask for integrity in our sport, it should come in all facets. And this is just one of those areas. So we can't stand by and let this happen, Steve. We're going to fight this, and we'll take it to, you know, however we need to going forward. But we really hope that the opportunity to change and to make adjustments is embraced. There is that opportunity to do so now before it gets worse, and I really hope that is the direction that this ends up going.
Well, you would like to think that there'll be, you know, an effort to rectify the close whatever loop that is, you know, providing the inaccuracies, but we'll reach. I'll reach. Listen, Dave's been on, Dave Siegel's been on many times, and we'll certainly ask Dave for a reaction and a thought.
And I talked to him after your appearance. I reached out to him or his appearance on your show a couple maybe 6-8 weeks ago or something,
a little longer,
to talk about run up, and we had a good conversation about it and just how difficult it is to time races as a result, and that it needs to. They should really be pursuing that change. So I look forward to hearing from Dave.
Well, and you know, you one of the areas that we're talking external demands of customers, their own internal mechanism is involved in this. The graded stakes committee. I mean, the North American sales team that they rely on this for scores and ratings. Their own internal mechanisms need it.
It was a really good edit that I had received when I sent this out to some of my team that looks at some of our work. And they pointed out to me, the buyer figures are part of the determination for, and frankly, the Equibase and Briss and the Thoroughgraphs, RAGs, are all part of the score that determines do black type races get
exactly
into catalogs or not.
Yep.
I mean, I was apoplectic after having that pointed out to me, and I thought it added a lot to the story that this is truly talking out of both sides of the mouth to say we don't. This is your accuracy demands are too great, yet you've been using these figures to determine valuations on horses for the best part of a decade. Remarkable.
Pat, I appreciate the further detail and encourage everybody to read this, to read also Bill Finley's piece. I'm sure Bill will keep following up on it, and we'll quite happy to pursue further details and discussion because it's that important. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Not at all. Pat Cummings, everybody, and Thoroughbred Idea Foundation, but that really the missive that he put together is really more through his prism essentially of his career and the time at Trackus and really understanding the mechanism that's involved here. So it really cut across all of Pat's bailiwicks, as it were. We'll stay here. We got 10 minutes, a little less, and we'll close out Thursday back on the racetrack. And I had made a couple of references to yesterday, including Snap Decision and his absolute remarkable achievement yesterday, winning the Walsh under 165-pound impost. Quite something. And I think I saw that Joe Clancy said there hadn't been, that no horse had won at Saratoga 160 or above in back to the 70s, I think was the number, that Joe referenced. I also got to congratulate Team Matisse, Greg and Duke and Paul and Chick and the whole family. The first time starter in that state bred maiden race yesterday, Stimulus Check, and Benji Hernandez aboard. And Stimulus Check from the inside broke when it took over, just kept on going, wins off increasing lengths, and surprisingly, I'm sure the Matisse team was, sending the bets in on a steady basis. They didn't flood the market early. They fed it in. This is also a homebred, which is very cool. So, from every standpoint, great job by Team Matisse. I also want to congratulate, Ned Allard. How about, Ned with Abiding Star, who just dropped into the 40 range, and he's run for 40 and 35 before. Most times when he's done this, he wins, and I kind of kick myself a little bit because I'm a fan of the 7-year-old, and this was win number 13, and Ned Allard sneaks into town and takes the money and takes his horse home with him. Good job, Ned. And that started the pick five and put a lot of people, I think, on their heels. Shug with the Dat Farm homebred by Warfront in front, followed up with another win And the Golani Bridge comes back with a very nice effort for DJ Stable, and been gone for just over a year. And that was a very promising return for the four-year-old. I mentioned Toby's Heart earlier, and Brian Lynch for Terry Hamilton, and, of course, for Toby as well. And that was impressive. That was a nice performance. Rich Eng is standing by, and he's going to give us a couple of pushes on this Thursday card. Rich, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Steve. And before I do that, I just want to give a heads up on a few things happening out here in Vegas. I know people like to tune in and see what's going on in the great city of Nevada. But first, I'll start out with congratulations to the Vegas Golden Knights. When we talked last week, they were getting started with their series with the Chicago Blackhawks, and they dispatched with Chicago 4-1, and now moved to the next level. And the water gets deeper with each level, but the Stanley Cup is not supposed to be easy to win. So, knock on wood, we'll continue on that journey. Secondly, is last Sunday, there's a bet here in Las Vegas, Steve. It's called the Twin Quinella. And the prize pool was put up by Station Casinos, and usually it's $5,000. But during the month of August, it's been $10,000 on Saturdays. But last Sunday, there was something that happened where if people followed me on Twitter, they probably were able to save themselves some money. I don't know if you remember the last race at Del Mar on Sunday. There was an 8-horse field going to the gate, and there was a late scratch which knocked it down to 7. And the rules of the Twin Quinella bet is you must have 8 horses running in each leg of the Twin Quinella. So when there was that late scratch at the gate at Del Mar, it knocked it down to 7, which made all the bets in the Twin Quinella a refund. So I immediately posted something on Twitter, and a lot of people were alerted and able to refund those tickets. Some people, unfortunately, Steve, after they say, for example, if they lost the first leg of the Twin Quinella, they throw their tickets away. Mm. But you should always hold on to your ticket, because it's the old thing with, you know, don't get rid of your tickets until the race is absolutely official, because that scratch made all the bets refundable. So the people should follow me on Twitter, because I try to keep up on stuff like that. And the third item is the fact that, you know, for 2 decades I was the horse racing writer and the Las Vegas Review Journal, so a lot of people in the state still turn to me for information. But I've been getting a lot of inquiries because as we close in on the Kentucky Derby at Churchill Downs, we are still at an impasse with Churchill Downs between the Nevada Paramutual Association and Churchill Downs. I don't know if people remember, but we were not able to bet on the Churchill Spring Meet because no contract was ever signed. And now we're, you know, a couple of weeks out to the Kentucky Derby meet at Churchill Downs, and we still do not have a contract. And I've reached out to a couple of people, and it's the old story. We're, in quote, still negotiating, whatever that means. And we'll see what happens as we get closer and closer to the start of that Derby meet.
Yeah. All right. Well, I actually had forgotten about that, but I know that the amount of signals remain limited, right? There's still a bunch of signals that that people in Vegas are not able to bet on.
That is correct, Steve. A lot of tracks that normally we would be betting on, for example, like Canterbury Downs and the Indiana Grand and the Prescott Downs, things like that. They're not available to be bet on here in Nevada. And part of the reason, I think I addressed this on a show quite a few weeks ago, but the Nevada Paramutual Association, instead of wanting to pay a flat fee, would like a sliding scale based on handle, because so many of our casinos either are not reopened or the racebook properties are just not handling as much money as they were a year ago, for example, before the coronavirus. So our handles, in all honesty, are down, and Nevada Paramutual wanted some sort of relief with a sliding scale, and a lot of the tracks just want the flat fee and to keep the business as usual. So we are at an impasse with a lot of the smaller tracks, like the Canterbury and the Indian Grand and things like that, Louisiana Downs. These are tracks we would normally take. It would be like automatic. But they're not on the schedule this year at this point.
I appreciate all the that roundup, Rich. Rich, we got about a minute and a half, maybe 90 seconds. A couple of thoughts today. A couple of plays.
Yeah, let's go with two horses. We'll go to the second race in Saratoga, maiden special, going a mile and an eighth. And I'll call this my Andy Beyer logic of the illogic play. But the number five, Pago Carreto, is 6-1. This horse got beat pretty badly by 10 lengths in debut at Delaware Park. But Michael Stidham ships the horse to Saratoga, and lo and behold, gets Jose Ortiz to ride. So, you know, in the logic of the illogic, I'm asking myself, why is this horse here? And I'm thinking it's for best effort. So 6-1, I'm willing to take a shot on the five, Pago Carreto, in the second race. And as far as another choice, let's go to the finale, race 9, 6 furlongs, claiming 25. Todd Pletcher tried to give away the number 7 just right for 25,000, racing off a year layoff, ran a good second, and got beat by a 45-1 shot that is in this field, Manifest Destiny. But I'm just with 9-2 the morning line, I'm banking on this horse improving a little bit. Todd Pletcher gets a free roll with a claiming horse. Let's go with a 7 just right in the 9th race as my second play today.
Nice. So the 7 in the 9th and the 5 in the 2nd. I've got an eye on a horse that we ran against as well in the 4th, looking to break the maiden. Freudian Analyst, if you recall, for those of you that follow our Minute Mouse, Freudian Analyst catches my eye, 6-1 in here in the 4th. And, you know, it's funny. There's a horse, my friend Rick Delusky from Cincinnati, I worked with at Proctor, and he had to work in Norwich, New York for a while, south of Colgate. At the Norwich Pharmaceuticals, which Proctor owned, and we were all at a hockey game together, and his friend didn't really hear my name right, and so he started calling me Binkster instead of Bixter, and the horse Binkster has caught my eye for the last couple of years, and Binkster in the 7th today in the tail of the cat, and I tell you, I think Binkster, it's the right number in there. So I've got a couple of horses I've got connections to today, Rich. Rich, I appreciate everything, and we'll catch up soon as we start to look forward toward Derby. And, of course, Rich's analysis for Del Mar, a big weekend ahead, and you want Rich. Make sure you take advantage of Rich's opinion at Del Mar this weekend. I got to pull up quick because we're out of time. I want to thank Pat for his response to and his commentary in written form too regarding the situation with the GMAX system. Rich Ang, Steve Haskin. We didn't get to Tony today. We'll talk to Tony soon. Dick Powell too, and a lot of fun with John Hurricane Hurt that started the whole morning off. About 45 minutes to the Grade 1 New York Turf Riders Cup Handicap. And you might get the Eclipse decided today with that last stake of the Steeplechase calendar. Nick, I'm sure Nick's analysis is up. I didn't do anything else today other than those couple of off-the-cuff pushes. And we'll have a big weekend preview tomorrow, including everything from Del Mar with the big Pacific Classic card. Good luck today, everybody. Talk to you in the morning.
Summertime song. Fall on the apple. Oh, there goes a Buick 49, black sheep of the angels riding, riding down the line. We think there is a soul.